Gladys, troops, and welcome to another episode of Panels of War, the podcast that covers war comics on all fronts. My name is Josh Johnson, and I'm your host, and this is episode 3 of Panels of War, and we're going to be covering War Stories issue number 3, which is part 3 of Castles in the Sky, the arc that's been going on in this War Stories so far. Yeah, so we're just going to dive right in. We're going to be covering issue number 3. So, this picks up right after pretty much where the last issue left off, which, if you remember, our main character, Leonard Wetmore, he was on a bombing mission, which they encountered heavy resistance, and his bomber, Buffalo Gal, took a lot of damage, including the ball turret gunner and the opposite waist gunner was shredded with bullets and killed, and the bomber sustained heavy damage. So that was pretty much how the end of issue 2 ended, so here we're going to pick up with the aftermath of that. So, looking at the cover first, we have, it's actually a pretty simple cover, and the cover here is done by Matt Martin, who's done the covers for all 3 issues so far. And it's a pretty simple cover. Basically what it is, we're looking basically at the perspective of the top turret gunner. The perspective where it's a little out because we can see the whole ball turret. And he's obviously taken some damage because the plexiglass in the ball has been shot out and there's blood splatters on it. So obviously the ball turret gunner has been hit. But he's looking up and aiming his 250 caliber machine guns up at the silhouette of 2 German fighters. They look like Focke-Wulfs. You can't really tell because they're in silhouette as they're coming in front of the sun and some clouds, so they're, you know, using the sun as cover coming in. So it's a pretty simple cover, but it's pretty effective too, and I think it's a pretty good cover. So again, we have another variant cover with a pinup girl, as the last 2 have had. This one is of a sexy lady. She's naked aside for she has bandoliers of 50 caliber bullets going across her genitalia and her breasts, while she's also holding 2 magnums. And the name of this, the plane that this is for, is called Loaded and Bare, which this, the other 2, the previous 2 ones that tied into the planes that Leonard Wetmore was a crew member of. This one is just, this one doesn't have any connection to the story, just a cool variant cover. We have another one of the wraparound covers that the previous 2 issues had, and this one is of B-17 has just been, had a strafe run from I believe it's a Messerschmitt Bf-110, which is a heavy fighter used by the Luftwaffe, and as you can tell, it's a knife fighter because it has the little radar poles sort of attached to the nose of it, and he's just made a strafing run on B-17 that's all shot to hell, and it looks like its first engine on the left has been completely destroyed, and the second engine on the left is burning and smoking, and obviously this B-17 is going down. So another great cover by Matt Martin. So then we get our credits, which the credits are written by Garth Ennis, the interior artwork Keith Burns, covers by Matt Martin, colors are DigiCore Studios, letters Kurt Hathaway, editor-in-chief William Christensen, and from Avatar Press, 2014. So picking up with our story, we see our main character, Leonard Wetmore. He is at his love interest's cottage. Her name is Paula. We've met in the previous issues. And her bratty little son, Ronnie, is sitting outside. Remember, Ronnie doesn't have a liking to Leonard or just Americans in general because he thinks that the British soldiers are the best because his father was a British soldier and was killed in Sicily. So he hasn't taken a liking to Leonard being around his mom. And as Paula and Leonard are dancing, The narration is, I guess, another passage from the Handbook for American Soldier in Britain, basically, which are little guidelines for the American troops that are to, or how, like how to engage with the British public. And this one says that the British, they're reserved, they're not unfriendly, and that because the British live on a small island where 45 million people live, they seem to be more reserved and keep to themselves and, you know, guard their privacy because there's not much room, but, you know, there's not much room to spare. Whereas the Americans, and that's just not talking about physical room. That means like where, you know, they don't go up to people on trains or buses and, you know, just start talking just because they like to keep to themselves, but it's not because they're being, you know, unfriendly. And so this is something that Leonard lets Paula read, which I'm sure she gets a kick out of. And that, I think that would be kind of funny. Like, okay, you have this manual about how the Americans are supposed to treat you. And I'm sure they would just get a kick out of it. And again, there's another thing that she reads out loud to Leonard saying how British care little about size. And like the example they use is that, you know, London can be this city, but they don't have any skyscrapers. Which, to be honest, I don't really know how that ties in. How that ties in and why that's even mentioned in there, to be honest. And then she says something about, to Leonard, you know, if he's ever seen skyscrapers, I guess, you know, the British, to them, it seems like America is just filled with them. But he says that, you know, he's only seen them in New York, but they're incredible. And he says that, oh, yeah, he'd like to show her some at some point. And she said that she'd love to go to New York and see it. And they continue dancing, and I have to laugh a little bit because I can relate to this because I have a similar thing in my relationship. But Paula asks Leonard how old he is, and he says that, you know, he's 19, but he's going to be turning 20 in a couple months. And she kind of backs up a little shocked, and she's like, "Oh wow, I thought you were, you know, 22 or 23." Because she turns out that she's 29, so obviously there, you know, there's a you know, 10-year age gap between them, and I just have to laugh because in my relationship that's the same. My wife is 10 years older than I am, so I have to laugh a little extra at that. And obviously she's shocked because it is a little weird at first, but over time you get used to it. But anyways, so next we jump to a briefing by the commanding officer, and he's talking about Operation Argument, which is the destruction of the German Air Force, and explains that they're going to be bombing any aircraft factories and the airfields so that they can disrupt the production of German aircraft and basically to gain air superiority over the Nazis. And so the strength that they are going to have, they're going to have 21 groups of B-17s and 9 groups of B-24s. Taking off from England, and then they're going to be joined by 12 more bomb groups. They don't specify if it's B-17s or B-24s, but regardless, so you're going to have, let's see, 21 and 9 is 30. So we have 42 bomb groups. Now, a bomb group is made up of 3 squads, and a squad is made up of 12 bombers. So figure 12 bombers to a squad, 3 squads, it's 36 bombers in a group. So with the total number of that, yeah, it's a little over 1,500 bombers. So that's not being all dropped at once. That's spread out over, you know, a week. Plus they're also going to have, let's see, 17 fighter escorts plus 4 more from the other group in Italy joining them. So 21 groups of fighter escorts. Now, I don't know how many is in it. A fighter group. I'm not sure if it's the same as bombers. I don't think so, but I'm not quite sure. So it's a big operation that they have going on here, and that they're also hoping, because with all that fighter cover, they're hoping to draw out as many German aircraft, like fighters, that way they can, while they're also bombing and destroying the factories and airfields, any aircraft that goes up in the air will, for the Germans, will most likely get shot down. So that's also a plus on their side. And just a little more background on Operation Argument, and that way we can also pinpoint sort of the date, because so far we just know that, you know, following Leonard's journey, you know, he began in January, and then his previous mission that we went, or one of his previous missions was bombing, I think, Frankfurt, I think it was, and we could sort of pinpoint that as sort of the last kind of week of January. But, so some information on Operation Argument, which is also called the Big Week. And this was February 20th to 25th of 1944. And again, just to reiterate, it was basically bombing raids to destroy the German plane factories and airfields and to lure the Luftwaffe fighters into aerial combat. It's basically they could shoot them down to gain aerial superiority. And some notable leaders for this operation was Jimmy Doolittle, who I'm sure if you know your history a bit, was the leader of the, you know, the Doolittle raid, the retaliation bombing strike on Japan in April 1942. And the other big name here is, he might not be a well-known general, but this guy is actually sort of a local, you know, war hero where I live at in Reading, Pennsylvania, is Carl A. Spatz. And he is a resident of Boyertown, Pennsylvania, which is about 20, 25 minutes north from where I live. And at the airport, the Reading Airport, which is, it doesn't function commercially anymore, but the first weekend of June every year, there's actually a big World War II reenactment show. And the airfield that, you know, there is named after Carl A. Spatz. So I think that's just a little thing for me because it's, you know, right down the road from me, which I think is kind of cool. Anyways, so, you know, the bombing operations went, you know, and they went and they were successful. And the casualties for the Allies, for the Royal Air Force, they lost 131 bombers, while the U.S. Air Corps, they lost 226 bombers and 28 fighters, and that's 2,000 crewmen killed or captured. So when you do the math, it's about, of the, you know, 1,518 or 1,512 bombers that went, they ended up losing, what, 357, which is about, and so 76% returned. So I guess you could say that was a positive, but still, 300 bombers is a pretty big loss. And then the Luftwaffe, they lost 262 fighters, I guess I'm assuming in the air. That's not including any ones that were on the ground or any damage that they sustained from the bombs themselves. But they ended up losing 262 fighters, including 250 aircrew killed or injured, including 100 pilots killed. So yeah, so obviously this was a success for the Allies. And just a bit of aftermath, basically it spawned air raids on Berlin, so I guess once they realized that this helped them gain some area superiority, they would be able to launch some air attacks on Berlin also. And this continued on, you know, through the month of March, because on April 1st, this offensive ended. That way, the Allies could do some preparations for D-Day. So, there's just a little information on Operation Argument, because we won't see too much of it in the rest of this issue, to be honest. And let's see, as we continue back on into the story, Ed's narration, or not Ed, sorry, I'm thinking of the Nom, which is another one of my favorite war comics. Leonard, his narration, he just talks a little bit more sort of about what I just said, how basically how the bombers were bait, too, because with the bombers going out, that would draw out the Luftwaffe fighters so the Allied fighters can shoot them down. And basically how they're just cogs in the machine to take down the German. And he also says something which is sort of true, how, you know, being in the air, it was never, even though you came in contact with the, you never really met the enemy, because you can never really get a good look at the best you could see. You'd see your bombs go off from way up, and then maybe an enemy fighter would go by, you know, and you would see, for a split second, you would see, you know, they're just a helmet and with a mask or goggles on, and that's basically it. And how, you know, they're part of the war machine, but it's never really personal between them. But also, because of Leonard's experiences, you know, with what happened with the Valentine's Day, which was his bomber in the first issue, then they had that accident on the runway, which, you know, led to his entire crew killed. You know, his crew that he, you know, knew and became friends with, and they were all killed before they even got a chance to go on a mission. So when it comes to the Buffalo Gal, he doesn't even really know that much about them, and he doesn't even really remember much about it at all. He says that the captain played football, possibly for Notre Dame. The bombardier told dirty jokes. And one of the gunners, which he can't even remember which one, whether it's the waist or tail gunner, which now that I think about it, I don't know if that's the replacement for the one that was killed in the previous issue or if he's talking about that one. Never really says. But one of the gunners claims that they were a descendant of Jim Bowie, which if you know your history, Jim Bowie was one of the heroes at the Battle of the Alamo. But basically how that's pretty much all he knows about them. He tries not to know them or get attached to them in case, they end up getting killed. And how they're basically just 10 American lives thrown into a plane and just to do their job in the war. So after that, we go to the mission, their mission and operation argument. And he says how, the bad stuff started happening 2 hours into the mission, and how the fighter escorts were getting hammered by, enemy Messerschmitts and Focke-Wulfs. And the splash page here also, which is probably one of the best pages in the issue. So you see the distinction and how there are different groups of the different bombers. So in the foreground here, you have the B-24 Liberators, which they are, they're silver. They have the four engine, but they have sort of like the round tail fins. So you have a group of them in the forefront. And then behind/above them, you have, groups of B-17s, which the B-24s are silver, while the B-17s are green. And we see them, further in the background. I don't know which one I like more. I think they're both pretty cool. I sort of like the round fins for the B-24, but the B-17s, they're called the Flying Fortresses. That's pretty badass. One of my things that I like, and I mentioned in the last issue, one of the B-17s, I like the names that the crew designate for it. And the one I really liked the last issue was a B-17 that had a puss of black smoke like painted on it, and his name was Flak Eater. I like that one a lot. And this one here, the forefront B-24 has looks like a bomb with a face on it, like a grinning face on it, going straight down onto a swastika, and it says precision personified. So I think that's pretty cool. I like a plane that has a pretty catchy name on it. That's pretty cool. Anyways, and then, as it's going on, their mission, then they finally get attacked, by the enemy fighters. And right away, it looks like a Messerschmitt plows right into the front of one of the B-24s, like straight away, and just goes right into the cockpit. And that plane is obviously going down. And I didn't even notice it the first time I read it, but you can even see, and it actually just shows, the detail in some of these pages where you could see the plane Messerschmitt going in, and you could see the glass, the plexiglass for the cockpit, and like the nose shattering, and you could see the nose gunner, his legs are like sticking out, and his body's gonna be flying out there pretty much a split second. But anyway, so the groups of bombers, they're getting trashed by the Luftwaffe, and the gunners are shooting back. And so what happens then, there's another group that's further higher than the group that the Buffalo Gal is in. And I guess one of them sustained a lot of damage, so they decided just to drop their bombs, but they didn't realize that, they had friendlies right below them, and what happens is they drop their bombs and they hit their own planes, and the B-17 next to Buffalo Gal takes like a direct hit, and it breaks, like the right wing breaks off, and they obviously go down. And then one of the bombs basically rips off the propeller and part of the first left engine for the Buffalo Gal. So right away they're taking pretty heavy damage, and basically the captain of Buffalo Gal commands the bombardier to basically drop the rest of their ordnance, because they're not going to be able to do the mission with, missing a complete engine. So they just want to drop it and then turn around. So they end up doing that. But as that happens, it looks like they get another strafe. But this looks like some Fock Wolfs come in. And they're on the tail of the Buffalo Gal and just shooting away. And you can even see, like, the bulls are casing from the Fock Wolfs' guns just falling down to earth and just shooting out. And he guns down the tail gunner for Buffalo Gal. He just gets absolutely destroyed. And the bullets are going through, you know, shooting through, rattling around where Leonard is at. You know, his 50 cal gets, you know, shot to shit, and his opposite waist gunner gets hit, and yeah, bullets are just rattling around all throughout, you know, the inside of that plane, and they're taking a lot of damage. And then as the panels go on, you can see more holes, and now the second left engine is now on fire. So they're in a really tough spot, and you know, the pilot's just trying to gain control. And they do, as they are made with support by some P-51 Mustangs. Yes, they're one of my favorite planes. They're so sleek and so fast. It's awesome. They come in and they scare off the Fock Wolfs, but you don't really see them shoot any down. But maybe they just, you know, scared them off. Even though they're chased off, now another enemy fighter is coming down, bearing down on the Buffalo Gal. And this looks to be a Messerschmitt 110. I believe, yeah, the heavy fighter. Basically, this is one I pointed out on the cover. You can tell it's a twin engine, and it has the radar poles sort of sticking out of it, because this is used as a night fighter, because they mentioned it, saying how, damn, they even bring up the night fighters up. And so they makes a strafing run, and he just shoots a strafing basically from the nose past the cockpit all the way up, you know, through the midsection of the plane, and through the radio, you have the engineer basically calling up anybody who can come, whoever's left alive in the plane, to come up to the cockpit right away, because that strafing run killed and shot up the co-pilot, and the nose gunner. But well, the important thing are the pilots. Both of them are just, you know, torn up with bullets and dead in their seats. Well, the one is dead. The one is barely alive. So Leonard goes up to join the engineer to hop in the pilot seats and try to do what they can with this thing. But the Buffalo Gal is just shot to hell. They're two engines are gone. They're just holes everywhere. The nose gunner shot out. The tail gunner shot out. Missing both pilots. They're in real bad shape. So they move them move the pilots out. So let's see here. Yeah, so you have Leonard, who's the one waist gunner, the engineer, who's also in the pilot seat, so we have two of them left alive. The navigator is still alive. Bombardier is dead, and the other waist gunner. And that's all that's left alive. So out of the 10-man crew, you have four left alive. You know, the navigator is trying to put pressure on the waist gunner's wound, while Leonard and the engineer try to, you know, fly it. And, you know, do what they can, even though, you know, not sure if they'll make a safe landing, but at least try to get back. And so, you know, they turn around, and, you know, the pilot who's left alive is, you know, tells Leonard, you can take the mask off now, because they're below 12,000 feet, you know, because, you know, above 12,000 feet, there's no oxygen, so that's why you have to have the masks. But since they're below, they don't need it. And the captain, he, you know, has, you know, some wise last words. He says, she won't die. You know, she's a B-17, a flying fortress. She won't die, you know, flying fortress. That's why the story is called Castles in the Sky. Obviously, you know, the captain is very confident in the ability of the plane. So basically then what happens is that the engineer basically says that they need to dump off whatever they can, because there's so much weight still on there, including the bodies. So unfortunately, all six of the crew that were killed there, they have to just get thrown into the sea, because, you know, they only have so much fuel. They're running on two engines. They can't afford to have any dead weight, you know, literal, you know, pun intended, dead weight. So they keep flying, you know, trying to head back to England. They're over water, and they don't know where they're at. They say it could be the North Sea, it could be the English Channel, it could be the Atlantic Ocean, They have no idea where they're at, and you know they're going to lose another engine. And how's it going? One of the guys who's left basically takes up a spot in the top turret, and he claims that there are two Focke-Wulfs coming in, and he's ready to shoot them down. And then, I'm an idiot. So I'm assuming that this relates to the cover. I didn't put this two and two together. The cover where there's two planes coming in that, you know, using the silhouette of the sun, the sun create the shadow, so they just look like black silhouettes. Well, remember on the cover, I said that they were, they look like Messerschmitts. Well, it turns out, because that happens in here, too, in the actual story, it's not Messerschmitts, it is British Spitfires. Yes, the British lads come in to help guide this, wounded B-17 back to landing field. And what they do is, this is actually something they did in real life, with the pilots that were trained so well that they would be able to, if there was a shot of plane coming back that may need a little guidance, or they thought maybe wasn't going to be able to, make it to land in time, they would go take out two Spitfires or what was it, Hurricanes, the two main fighters that they use. They would be trained so skillfully that they could, and they so precisely take up their wingtips and tip the wounded plane, just enough where they could stay afloat to make it, which is pretty skilled. There are definitely some pretty skilled pilots there in the RAF. Yes, yeah, so that's what happens. So they guide them back to their airfield in Tombrook. And meanwhile, down on the base, we see Paula and Ronnie, and they're walking, because remember, Paula she works in the kitchen there, and they're walking, and Paula says to Ronnie about why, he's been really, really rude to Leonard. He's been nothing but nice to him. And yeah, she understands, I guess she sort of understands why he's being kind of a douche, but still thinks that, he needs to be respectful. And Ronnie finally confesses, saying that he just doesn't want Leonard to, be his new dad. And Paula, leans down and says that, that he's not going to be your new dad. No one's ever going to replace his dad. The war takes people away, but it also puts you in situations where you can meet other people who you would never otherwise be able to meet. So, you just have to just take it as it goes. And and that's a real nice conversation, too, because sometimes, it happens in real life, too, when, family loses a parent, the remaining one meets somebody else, the kids can become a little resentful, and, that does happen in real life. But as they're talking, they get interrupted by Buffalo Gal, who, has been guided in by the Spitfires, but, it looks like one of its landing gear is not going down, so its front left landing gear is still up, so it's going to come and land awkwardly as it goes right over the medical tent, and it, went roughly and crashes and has some sort of explosion. And you see Paula and Ronnie's reaction. You even see Ronnie a little shocked. And yeah, it's a pretty big explosion. And you don't know if any of them survived or not. But then we cut back to Paula's cottage, and it looks like it's a photo of, I'm not quite sure. Maybe that's Leonard, or maybe that is Ronnie's father. I'm not quite sure. You can't really tell. But anyways, it turns out that Leonard survived, and that, he's probably going to be sent home and discharged from the military because, the Air Corps isn't going to have a use for a one-eyed gunner. So obviously, due to, the crash, he either lost an eye or, was blinded in it. He still had it, but still blinded in it. And it looks like his leg must have been broke, too, because his leg and foot all the way up to his femur is in a full cast. But it says that, he's going to have to be around in England for a while before he gets sent home. I guess he has to sort of heal up a bit before he can go. And finally, Ronnie comes over and finally says thanks to Leonard for, being a nice guy. I mean, it's the best, apology you can get. I mean, he's not, super, super sympathetic, but, I mean, it's something. He says something about he didn't want Leonard to get big-headed about it. I guess, I don't really know what that means. I guess maybe he didn't want the, you know, didn't want Leonard to feel super appreciated or something. I'm not quite sure. That's a little, it's a little weird, but okay. So the final bits is, you know, Leonard's, you know, dialogue basically doing more of the, you know, comparisons between, you know, the American and British, like how, like, they're different sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not slang, but like, where was it? How she says autumn and Americans say fall. She says queue instead of line, cinema instead of movies. I guess just showing how the way out of the war brought them together, two people from different societies, but now they're together. And then at some point, it says it's something she would always say about every Brooklyn autumn, about the little leaves and stuff. I mean, basically just showing saying how they do end up having a future together. At some point, we don't know when, you know, they move there or how often, or how, not how often, how long they're together. We never know. But the last shot is the two of them holding hands outside of Paula's house while another squad of B-17s flies overhead. And that's the end of the story. So that's the conclusion of Castles in the Sky. I do think it's a fitting conclusion, though I have to say, I think this issue is just a little weaker than the other two. I do like Leonard and Paula's relationship. We don't see them together all that much, but obviously, they do like each other. They do flirt a bit, and it is kind of cool to see, you know, the combining of two different societies. And plus, I think sort of back, I don't know, maybe back then, I know relationships were a lot, I guess, simpler, you know, where, you know, they would, couples, they'd know each other for a couple weeks and then get married, and then, you know, then they'd be together for, you know, 60-some years. You know, it's a lot more, it's not as complicated as it is today. So, I guess it sort of works. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, we do get to see what happens to Leonard. So, he ended up not having that long of a term of service. He landed in England in January, and then by the end of February, he ended up getting wounded and out. So he only had to serve for about 2 months before wounded, and then, you know, he would get medically discharged, because the Air Corps is not going to want a one-eyed gunner. That's not going to do them very much good. The art is pretty good. I think the art is a little bit better than the last issue. Like I said, I think with Keith Burns, I think the last issue that he did, I do think it was good. I didn't think it was like, it wasn't horrible or anything. I just didn't think it was as good as Matt Martin's. I think mainly the inking was a little weird. Like some of the faces looked a little off, and the ink wasn't as strong. I think it's a little better here. The planes still look pretty good too. Like I said, mainly just the facial stuff, but you know, it's a little bit better. The aerial combat again is pretty stellar. You know, a lot of battle damage on the planes, and you know, there's a lot of explosions and bullets hitting and bullet shells blasting all over the place. The big splash page again, what I think is the best, is like showing the different groups of B-17 bombers. I think is pretty, or B-17s and B-24s. I think that's pretty cool. It's a pretty epic shot there. Probably one of the most detailed pages, like I said, is the one where it shows the Messerschmitt basically colliding and crashing right into the head on to that B-17, and there's just a lot of little fractures of metal and bits and body parts all over the place. That was we're pretty really stellar shot. Too bad it's just one little panel, but pretty good. As in comparison with the other two, I think, because we don't really know much about the rest of Leonard's crew. Now, granted, it makes sense because he doesn't either. So, like, we don't even know their names. They just call out. They just call each other radio operator, engineer, waste gunner. It's like, at least I would have liked to know their names a little bit. But overall, like I said, good drama too. Like, you know, the pilots get killed, so the non-pilot members have to you know, try their best to get it back. And then to show the British pilots coming in and using their skill with the, you know, with the wing, guiding the bomb with the wingtips was pretty cool, because that's something that actually happened. So That's pretty cool too. But so overall, a good finale to the arc. I think, again, I don't think it's as strong as the other two parts, but still pretty decent. So if I had to give this issue a rank, which in my ranking system I use, you know, the real world, you know, military rankings, or at least the United States military rankings, I would give this the rank of, I give the previous two issues, I give both them the rank of Colonel, which is an 8 out of 10. I'm going to give this one the rank of Major, which is a 7 out of 10. So, two Colonels and a Major were the rankings for this arc. So, pretty good arc, and I'm definitely going to return to cover more of these war stories. So, we'll do issue 4 at some point, not next. I'm going to try something else next. I think issue 4 something to do with the Israeli Civil War. So it's not all World War II. It's, you know, sort of spread between different conflicts. So I'm definitely looking forward. I'm definitely going to we'll definitely cover it. But yeah, so that is going to be it for this episode and for this arc. Yeah, next, I'm not sure what I'm going to do next. I'm probably going to do something a little older. Maybe since this is pretty recent, this is only, you know, 5 years old, I'm going to probably do something old school, maybe from, like, Charlton Comics or something, or maybe from, like, you know, 50s, 60s DC Comics, like Our Fighting Forces, or Star Spangled War Stories, or Fighting Marines, or World at War, or something like that, just so we can get a little bit of variety, because I don't want to do newer stuff. I want to go look at older stuff too, so sort of where, you know, the war comics originated. Plus, I'm sure they're not as compelling. I mean, I'm not holding too high hopes, but I mean, I'm interested to look forward. So, yeah, so that's gonna do it for this for episode 3 of Panels of War. If you have any feedback or, you know, have any comments to make, you can always email me at panelsofwar@gmail.com, or you can, you know, follow the Facebook page or follow me on Twitter, which is, you know, Panels of War Podcast. Like I said, I'm not sure what I'm going to do for episode 4 yet, but so keep your eyes on the socials if you haven't liked it already. And yeah, so thank you for listening. And with that, dismissed.